Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Craig Parkinson, and this is the Two Shot Podcast. Pop the kettle on and let's dive in. How the devil are you? It's Thursday. You know it is. Yeah, it's the T-Shirt Podcast. Oh, I'm a bit cold. I might have to put the heating on, but I don't really want to do that at 10 to 3 in the afternoon. It doesn't seem right, but it is. It's very cold here in Manchester, but something that has just warmed me up no end. Now, you know how much I love doing this podcast. I get to meet all sorts of interesting characters week in, week out. But this episode that you're about to hear has jumped straight into the top three favourite TSPs of all time. It's just a beautiful chat with a lovely, lovely man. It's Sean Keaveney. He was our breakfast show host on Six Music. We all listened to him. He jumped to the afternoon. And now he's doing all sorts of incredible things that you're going to hear about. Even before I got to know Sean, he's interviewed me a few times and we have various mutual friends and we became pals. So it was a joy to have him on. We've been trying to plan it for quite some time. But this frosty, wintry January afternoon was the perfect time to do it. And we had the greatest chat. It's so lovely because of Sean, really. He was a radio personality, a DJ, but he's always been himself. He's always been Sean. And I know that's what gained him such a following and such a community. Community, the word that comes up quite a lot. Such a community with his radio show. Yeah, and you're going to get to hear it. So let's welcome to the Two Shot Podcast the wonderful Sean Keaveney. Enjoy. See, I went all radio then. Sean Keaveney. And you enjoy. And I shall see you at the end. Sean, I don't normally do this, but because it's you...
Special.
It's very special. I was on the treadmill this morning. Actual treadmill, not the treadmill of life. And I thought, I'm going to write Sean an introduction to pay homage to what you do. So are you ready? Should we go with it?
And then yeah, can't
notes
wait.
Afterwards. Are you right? Okay.
Thank you.
I'm going to get my best radio voice on. Okay. Let's go. This week on the Two Shot Podcast, I'm joined by a man, a legend in the world of broadcasting. For years, he was the beating heart of our breakfast routine. To some, he's the Mike Yarwood of his generation. A man of around seven voices, primarily being deceased Coronation Street characters that only those of a certain age will remember,
and two
of the Beatles. a sometimes stand-up comic, an author, an interviewer, a band member, a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, citation needed on those last three occupations. He's a Lancashire legend who's lining up, yeah, and changing the way we listen to radio one day at a time, but mainly on a Friday over the internet. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Sean W. Keaveney!
Now I know why I do introductions, having had one from you, because it disarms the protagonist immediately and makes them go all soft-bellied, and they go, oh, that's nice, you've made an effort, you know what I do. It's brilliant, isn't it? It's a good little device.
I mean, it is good. But as I said, in the 5 years I've been doing this podcast, I've never done that. I might start doing it. Do you think it worked? Did you like that, Sean? Did it butter you up?
It buffed me right up. You know, you need it in Jan, don't you? You need a little buff. And I'll just take you up on a couple of things there. All right, yeah, all correct. Big red ticks all round.
Thank you.
But I particularly enjoyed your mention of Mike Yarwood, not only because you're just about old enough to remember him, uh-huh. And for those that aren't, he was mostly an impressionist of the 70s and early 80s, and his birthday is the 14th of June, which is my birthday, which is Boy George's birthday, and he's also Donald Trump's birthday.
Oh, see, it's almost like I've done a bit of research for you.
The boy done great.
It's all right. Started all right, isn't it? Sean, as we normally do, this is how I normally open things. And I'm just going to fire some questions to you. Interpret them however you wish. But we start off, as we always do, with Sean Keaveney. A good film or a good book?
Christ. Not Christ. No, that's not what I want to put down. The Bible.
The Bible.
Oh, read it from cover to cover. I did a theology degree, actually. I actually did a theology and public media degree. Not because I was a God-fearing citizen, but because I had to leave and go back to college under a cloud, and theology was the only subject available. Anyway, that's an aside. I would say, as far as a book's concerned, I haven't read a good novel for over a year now. I've slipped into a music biography space recently, but I want to get back into novels. And the last good one that I read was, I forgot the name of it. What was it called? The one that Douglas, you know, the Scottish writer, Douglas Stewart.
Yes. Was it Shuggy Bane?
Shuggy Bane. Well done. Loved that. I love stuff like that. There's one called Carew as well. It's one of my favourites, which is about this New York writer, this smart-ass New York writer who is a bit of a mess, and he messes up everybody's lives around him, and then it ends in the most ridiculous and surreal and brilliant and sad way. And then as far as films are concerned, I really wish that I could remember the film that my wife and I watched last night. It was a Lebanese film. It was really good. But to play it safe, as if I was Stephen Henry on the snooker table, I would say something like, I'd have to say something really obvious, because I'm not really that much of a film buff, and say something like, In the Name of the Father, or The Shawshank Redemption, or the first two Godfathers.
Very, very strong choices. Sean, for you, Saturday night or Sunday morning?
Oh, God. Well, no, it's more Sunday morning, isn't it, than Saturday night. I think it changes over the years, and I'm looking forward to it changing again.
Because when do you think it'll change again?
Right, let's think. My youngest is three, because I've gone back into the burning building. And so,
like an idiot. Why did you do that?
We have a mutual friend who went into the burning building just a year before me. I mean, what, you know, the thing is, she's a pleasure to get up for. She's absolutely amazing. So it's all right. But when she starts laying in a bit, or when she starts getting to that age where you could leave me with Nanny and Grampy for the weekend if you want, then I'll be right back on it. But I rate that probably won't be for another 5 or 6 years. So for now, it's Sunday morning. It's coming downstairs with the youngest, or perhaps with all three of them, putting on a pot of coffee, and eating some quality carbohydrates, staring out the window.
It's a strong, strong Sunday start. Sean, as the father of two young boys and one young girl, did you see a huge... Because I'm obviously father of a son. Mm. I don't have a daughter. But do you see huge differences as between the young boys and the young girls? Were you prepared for it?
No, I wasn't prepared for it at all. I mean, I'm not prepared for anything in life, because, and people are going to get really sick of this, because I've talked about little else in interviews for a year now, but being adult ADD, I won't go into it. I'll leave that twitching on the at your feet there. I'm not going to have to unpack that. But one of the things that happens when you have it, for me at least, is that future planning, thinking into the future, it's not available to you. So you don't. The only thing you've got is panic, because you can't imagine what it's like. You can't plan it, so you tend to panic. So when the third Baba came along, I was just. I think I ruined my wife's pregnancy completely by just constantly being in a free fall. Mike, it's just fucking. But the thing about this particular girl, and I've heard a lot of people say this, the difference between boys and girls, and it sort of rings true, that to be very generalised about it, boys tend to be more chaotic, more energetic in a physical sense, more physical, a bit more crackers, a bit more difficult to entertain. You know, you can tell them the thing 80 times and they don't really listen. And in general, I'm being very general here, I know there are many exceptions to rules, but girls tend to be a little bit more nurturing, a little bit more in tune with what another person thinks, even at a young age. You know, my 3-year-old girl is already like tidier than my 14 and 12-year-old boys. You know, just as an example, you know, and that's just the really basic stuff. I mean, that, you know, obviously as they get older, it gets much more sophisticated, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I've noticed so far.
So far, it could all change.
Yeah, it will.
Sean, you're at the theatre.
Oh God,
It's not going well. Do you walk out of the interval or do you sit through it?
I've done it. I've done that before. I have walked out of things. I'm a bit of a. I've been told off for saying this recently because you don't categorise yourself, Sean. Don't paint yourself into a corner. But I tend to be a bit of a French exit kind of a guy. I do that more at nights out than stuff like the theatre. So, you know, I have a skin full. I think I've said everything I'm going to say, I start getting a bit tired, and then I just fuck off. But in the theatre, I don't go to the theatre often enough, I don't think, to do that. So when I do go, it's because of something that I really want to see. And so it's so unlikely. However, I think in the year 2005, I've seemed to remember, this isn't quite the theatre, going to watch Chicago in Covent Garden. Chicago. With my ex-wife. Oh, that's a bit more New York, isn't it? And sorry, I can't do all the American nuances. It's not one of my seven voices, that. And
oh, Percy.
Get off me, woman. and me and my ex-wife walked out of that halfway through because it was just like it weren't working for us. You know, I'm not really a musicals guy as a general rule myself. I don't know about you.
My first job was a musical, Sean. Can't sing. How did I get it? Don't know.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, it was either graduate from drama school and carry on working in Pizza Hut in Wood Green. Not a nice environment. Nothing against Pizza Hut. I paid my wages whilst at drama school. It was good. Or do I go and pretend to sing in a West End show and earn a few hundred quid a week at 21 in 1997 and try and bluff it? Yeah, bluffed it for a few months. It was all right, wasn't it? Best acting I've ever done, getting that job.
I'm amazed I didn't know that. That's so good. Yeah, so that's it. I'm not that big on it.
Sean, less ambition or more ambition as we age?
Well, that's a really good question, I think, for people in my age, because I'd love to be in the position of being able to say less, because if I had followed every rainbow of opportunity up to this point, and sort of become one of my first radio bosses, the brilliant, the wonderful Leslie Douglas, who used to run Six Music and Radio 2. And I've said this before, but one of the things she said to me in our first proper meeting when she employed me in 2006 was, and she's a wonderful Geordie woman, you could be the next Jonathan Ross. And I was like so filled with, what? It's the only time I've ever felt it. I've certainly not felt it in the intervening 17 years. Walking on sunshine, Craig. I was like, well, I am just a ball of potential here. the only way is up. And Yaz was right. But I didn't really fulfill all that potential in that way. I've fulfilled it in many other ways, and I don't have any regrets about it. But the consequence of me not being that ambitious for the last 20 years is that I probably have to get a bit more ambitious now so that I can continue to pay my mortgage and maybe actually be able to afford to retire at 78. You know what I mean? That's my new ambition. Is maybe I could get a little boat or something when I'm 78. I mean, like a tug, like one that goes on the canal, and I can take my foot off the gas around that time. So in a weird way, I've got to force myself to be more ambitious in these middle years, I think.
Was there ever a plan to go? Sorry, I'm just writing down, scrapping out seven, writing eight. No, very strong, Geordie. Was there ever a plan for you to move into television? Because for me, before we got to know each other, and you've interviewed me a few times, your home just seems the radio.
Mm.
You fit so well, and I think I know why. I think it's because you're a very good listener.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. Yeah, I think I agree. I do agree with you. I think that I'm radio. You know, cut me and it will say radio throughout. It would be awful to do that. But I am radio. I am an audio person.
Mm.
And I think that, again, that's a lot to do with my brain and my wiring. And as you will notice, I'm doing it right now. For the listeners at home, you can't see. I close my eyes a lot when I'm talking. You know, it's something to do with the way it all works up there. And so the audio environment for me, cans on, maybe
headphones.
I've got headphones, sorry, using the technical parlance there.
Headphones.
If I've got my little environment right, got my mixing desk, and I know what all the faders do, I've got my little cart wall, which is where all my sounds reside, and all my little beds that I talk over, I've got the music over here. If I've got that, I can do anything. I could do a 24-hour broadcast if you really wanted to. Who would want that? So I'm in my comfort zone. And you take me out of that, you put, as you know this, if you're in a television studio, you are completely powerless, really. Mm-hmm. You're virtually powerless. You know, if you're Chris Evans in 1993, maybe you're not, because you're a powerful person and you can hire and fire and say, I want it like this, and that's a load of shit. But mostly, in general, if you're doing telly, you're just a cog in a wheel, and some people are so good at it, and it's never been my ambition, really. And I do bits, you know. I do like doing stuff for Sky Arts. They very kindly employ me every year now, or more or less, to do the Isle of Wight Festival or something, you know. And I'm just one of two other presenters. It's usually me and Edith or somebody else, and it's great, you know. I tell you what, you and a cameraman go up to the top of the big wheel and talk some shite for 90 seconds. You know, I'm good at that.
No problem.
But the idea of doing it proper doesn't really interest me, you know. And also, I'd probably have to get one of those Peloton bikes, Craig. And I probably, you know what I mean? The vanity would kick in. I'd see myself and I'd go, "You got to lose a stone. You have to lose a stone." And that, you know what it's like. At the age of 50, having to lose a stone, forget it, mate.
I mean, it's hard enough at 46, I find, Sean. It all changes, doesn't
Oh,
it?
Oh, mate, when you get over 45, your eyes go, you know, you put another couple of inches around the waist. It's a nightmare.
Sean, one last question. Not one last question, one last question of this. Would you say you're a better host or a better guest?
Well, I love that. Well, that's another good one because I've rarely been a guest. Until recently, and then leaving Six Music it was weird, but it was good for so many things. And one of the things it was all of a sudden good for was that people wanted to interview me, and it felt great because, but partially, be honest, it's a bit of an ego boost, which we all need. But secondly, it took the weight right off me. I didn't have to do what you've had to do and fucking go on the internet and find stuff out about it. You just sit there and talk nonsense. But the idea of, I mean, again, me and my missus sit and we'll watch a Graham Norton on a Friday night just to wind down. And Some people are professional guests, aren't they? Some people are so good at it.
And they bring the anecdotes.
Yee.
They know exactly what to do. Or if they've got that, those impressions in the locker that no one's seen them do before, they're going to bring those out in prime time, aren't they?
They're really good. And it's a thing that, you know, I mean, obviously the greatest exponent, Billy Connolly or somebody like that. But then there's loads of other people who are good at it. So I don't know. I still think I'm probably a better host, though. Probably. Because I am good at getting the best out of people in general, I think. Mm. Very, very few people that I've come up against that I've not ended up tickling the belly of, you know.
That's true.
You included, Craig. Your belly has been tickled by me a couple of times, as you say.
Off air and on air, some would say. But I miss, you mentioned Graham Norton there, and he's very good at his job and what he does. But I do miss the days of the other Parkinson. And for them, you know, the other one, you know that one.
The lesser known.
The lesser known. I miss that format. I miss that style of people coming on and not just having 7 to 12 minutes of flogging the new TV show or, you know, talking about a film that we all know is terrible, but they're really pushing it. I find that I don't get anything about that person, which is one of the reasons why I started this podcast, because it's like, I don't care. Whenever I talk to actors, we never talk about jobs. We never talk. You don't have to tell me what's on. You're on telly next week. I don't really care. It doesn't matter. I want the listeners, and I want to discover more about the person who's in front of me, like they did. Some people won't remember this at all, but like Russell Harty used to do, like Michael Parkinson used to do, in some respects, like Wogan used to.
Yes.
You know?
I totally, yeah. I mean, absolutely. But again, it's an old idea in a sense. But then again, that's what's good about podcasts, I suppose, isn't it? Is that it fills that gap a little bit, and your podcast like yours is great for that. It gives people an opportunity to unpack themselves a little bit and a bit more time. But yeah, those names, Wogan, and he's back. He's never far from my thoughts because he was my mentor when I started in Wogan House, and he was a very kind man to me. But also just an incredible, like you say, TV host. He was if you go on YouTube and watch some of those vids of him interviewing people, he's incisive. Sometimes he's just playing funny. He's always getting the best out of people. But when he needs to be, he can stare down the barrel and be really harsh, like put people in their place, not take any shit. It's incredible skill to do that on national television three nights a week, which is what he's doing.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. And like you say, like Parkinson, it's that idea of, that's what I completely agree. I'm allergic to people selling me shit. And that's perhaps an age thing. And I can't be doing with it. I did a very ill-starred podcast, and I only did 10 episodes of it because it's too much like our work, Craig. But it was called Sean Keaveney's Creative Cul-de-Sac. And that was the idea of that. It was like just going through your notebooks. So we're going to have Craig Parkinson on this week. Bring us a load of stuff from the top drawer of your desk, and we'll go through some of your dead ideas. And that was the basic idea. But the real idea behind it was, let's just have a conversation about something with an interesting person who's done some stuff, but not about what they're selling now. Because what could be a bigger turn-off than that? Well, Incidentally, Community Garden Radio is every Friday. You can catch it at patreon.com/Sean Keaveney. The lineups wherever you get your podcasts. And another episode, another series of Your Place or Mine will be coming up in April on BBC Sounds.
Griff, there's your edit point there. Just take that out when we go and set it. Sean will be fine with it. We'll plug it in the show notes. Sean, let's go way back. Let's go back to Lee in Lancashire. Let's talk about family life in the Keaveney household. Take me there, please.
Oh, I'm glad. Oh, what a lovely question. I am blessed, Craig. Blessed. I am a blessed man. I've had this convo relatively recently, and it's been great to be taken back to childhood, because I cannot. When people ask me that, it reminds me about gratitude, how important it is to have gratitude, you know. And so obviously we can all get caught up with
oh, that should have happened. That didn't happen. Why is that not job come on? Why do we need a kitchen extension. Next door's got one. We haven't got one. What the fuck's going on? You know, really important to remember a bit of daily gratitude. And I honestly, my family are an ancient and modern wonder of the world. My family, they're a big old family, northwest of England. The Keaveneys, I don't know, like, you know, 100 years ago would have been living in sort of near Galway somewhere. And then one of the poor bastards came across at the Irish Sea and ended up in near Wigan somewhere, which, I mean, what a godforsaken place that must have been. It's hard times now, but 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And there we go. But, you know, we always, the Keaveneys live near each other and they still do. I'm the massive outlier who left, but nearly all the rest of them. And that includes all our other families. So the Keaveneys, the Mellings, the Orrells, you know, they're all sort of within streets of each other. There's this huge network. And so when we went back up at Christmas, it's just, there are so many people to see. There are so many houses to go in. But when we were kids, our house in particular, my mum and dad's house, became a hub for a lot of my friends. And they all used to sort of descend upon our house and we'd have huge Christmas parties, family and friends. It's all very, it's very beautiful. And it's only when you look back as an adult, you realise if you are any kind of success as a human, that's why, you know, because they sort of created that, whatever, you know. I mean, there are bad things about it. Like, that's one of the reasons I'm not a particularly ambitious person, because I haven't got any burning thing inside me, any kind of, I'll fucking show you, Dad. You said I couldn't fucking do it. Well, I'm fucking doing it. You know, there's none of that, because my mum and dad have always been, well, I just don't know why he's not Prime Minister, Billy. Neither do I, Joan. It's their loss. Anyway, he's on Radio 2 on Friday and it's the best show I've ever heard. You know, so with all that love, you know, the waves of love, how can you fail? You can't. So
no, not at all. The foundations there are lovely, very strong and supportive, aren't they?
Isn't it? Mm. It's so lovely. Having a good northern hearth and home, that I'm very happy about it.
Do you miss the north, Sean?
Yeah, I do miss it. I do miss it. Oh, you know, all the conversations go, maybe one day, you know, maybe we could, I don't know. But I don't think I'd probably would move back to Leigh, really, because I wouldn't be able to do my work so much there and stuff like that, you know. And we go up a lot anyway, so it's probably not that necessary. You know, that I did have a thought at Christmas. We were walking past a nice bungalow on the canal, and I was like, I tell you what, you know, this is me being not being avaricious again. If I could just, like, have a bit of a successful couple of years and then buy a little cottage in, like, on the canal near Leigh. And then whenever we come up, you know, we can stay in our little cottage by, you know. Your wife's just like, right, okay. Weird dream to have there, Sean. But you shoot big, mate. You shoot big.
Speaking of the north and speaking of radio, Sean, you do have it's a strong Lancashire accent that you have that you've never really shied away from. Were you ever told by heads of department in radio to tone it down or sound more like XYZ?
Well, I was lucky in a way, because when I started, which would have been, I did my first ever shows on my own on London's 104.9 XFM in the year 2000, fucking hell, 23 years ago. Mm. And the first shows I did, they were very kind and they gave me a slot, which was midnight till 6 a.m. on a Sunday, 6 hours. I'm currently doing Johnny Walker's rock show on Radio 2 at the moment. God, thank you so much to Johnny for letting me do it. And that's a one-hour show.
Oh, that seemed like that was so much fun to do 1 hour.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
You've not taken your coat off. You know, I've been saying this. I've been in post office queues longer than this fucking show. But, you know, 6 hours is a slog, you know. But the one thing that I used to dread was they do a thing called a snoop, or they used to do, where you would have, whenever your fader went up, it would activate a little tape recorder and it would record your link. And every so often, your line manager, your program controller, in my case, the guy called Andrew Phillips, a lovely guy, actually, he'd call me in.
Nine voices. sorry to interrupt you, Sean. Carry on.
That's right. I don't know. I certainly can't do a New Zealand accent. I dread it because he didn't, with the best will in the world at the time, I just don't think he really got what I was doing because nobody did. It was like, why is this doer, slow talking, miserablest guy talking? Yeah, don't you listen to Capital? Don't you listen to Magic FM? Don't you understand what a radio presenter is? Haven't you ever heard Bruno Brooks? You know, so the one thing that people like that would always say without fail, and it still happens sometimes today if I work at other stations, is just a little bit, maybe a bit more, just a bit more energy.
Just bring it up a bit.
Yeah.
Bring it up.
That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. You love it. You'd love to pow. You love to pow. Go on. China in your hand. You love it.
Exactly. You know, that sort of with a smile. Say it with a smile.
I want to see the smile between your eyes, and it needs to come out of the voice.
Okay? It's that. You've heard it. You've seen it. It's a bit, it's very Stephen Toast, you know. And I was the one of the few times, and I don't make many epochal decisions because I'm indecisive and I can't plan. But one thing I decided really early on was it's shit or bust, mate. You either employ me because you like me or you can fuck off, because I'm not going to sit here and pretend, especially not at 3:30 on a Tuesday morning, and pretend to be happy to be there. You must be joking. I mean, that's actual insanity, isn't it? And the idea of tuning it, they don't have live overnights on any radio stations anymore. I much lament that. If you tuned into somebody at 3:20 on a Tuesday morning and they sounded chirpy, and let's go through the papers. Anyway, Rishi Sunak is talking about forcing children to do maths until 18. Huge energy crisis, of course. Bills go up 79,000%. Anyway, this is China Crisis with Just Died in Your Arms Tonight. It's like, that sounds like the kind of thing that if you know, you've got a gun to the back of your neck.
Yeah, do you remember a film called Midnight Caller?
Yeah.
That's what I used to like. It's just all very, very slow, and there people would call in with questions, dilemmas, problems, and they would just talk through the night.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. That's what I would like to hear on the radio. That's what you want at that time of night. Exactly. You want intimacy. You want honesty. You want, and also in my view, it's been borne out, people want to hear somebody who sometimes is suffering more than they are. Or at least as much. They don't want, and that's why the Chris Evans effect is remarkable to me. And that's another, it's a divergent and totally different kind of broadcasting. It's an aspirational kind of broadcasting, which I also understand the need for. That kind of, my life's great. I drove here in a Ferrari. I was just saying to my wife in our 7,000 square foot kitchen, you know, that some people really like that stuff, and that's great, but that is I would literally rather cut my fucking ears off with an axe than listen to that for 9 seconds. I'm much more about things being real, you know.
But I think that's you just said the word intimacy. I think that is such a strong connection with the listener to radio, because I can hear lies on the radio.
Yeah.
You can just hear it. Or if someone's interviewing somebody and they're laughing at what they've said, you don't find that funny. You don't have to pretend that it's funny. But with your personality, with a radio personality, your breakfast show compared to hosting an afternoon show, what changes did you have to implement there?
it's another zinger, actually. That makes making me think about stuff.
Well, that's what we want.
I honestly think that one of the reasons that I got shown the door at Six Music was because we didn't think about that enough. You know, and it's,
I don't want to open old wounds, Sean. Sorry,
I couldn't be happier to be out of there. But I miss a lot of my lovely friends there. But otherwise, happy to move on. But that does answer the question in a way, because in all honesty, I don't think I took the change. I couldn't get my head round it, to be honest. I'm not very good at that. I'm good at the talking bit. I'm good at the dicking about bit and making jokes, making things funny, making people feel comfortable. I'm good at all that, the nuts and bolts of. But anything to do, as I said before, with planning, with strategy, terrible at it. And so what ended up actually happening, Craig, is that I really think that we more or less did what we were doing in the morning, more or less in the afternoon. We made a couple of different, couple of little changes and tweaks, but that was it. And consequently, I internally, in my deep, deep subconscious, and I'm usually quite good these days at listening to the gut instinct, but I sort of didn't in this instance because I was so desperate to leave breakfast. I was so tired that I would do anything. And when they offered me the afternoons, I was like, well, that's good because at least I don't have to go looking for another bloody job somewhere else, you know, and I'm a path of least resistance guy. So I took it, but didn't revamp it enough. And inside, I could hear this tiny voice like at the bottom of a well, Craig, going, and it was my inner voice.
You fucked up. You've made a mistake.
And I was like, shut up. I'll have another half bottle of wine.
I won't shut up. You've teed up, mate. You've made a mistake. You should have left. You should have done something brave.
Shut up. And I was like, and it was literally that internal dialogue for ages. And then COVID happened and we were amongst the only people who could do our jobs at that time. And we felt, yeah, we took that dead serious and that really grew at that moment. My connection with my audience got really, really strong then because of that intimacy, because a lot of people were on their own, because a lot of people were stuck.
Yeah.
And it was an ill and it was an awful time. And so in a way, although it was the worst time ever, it was a strong time for us building that relationship. And but that's the thing. In the end, when they sort of said, you got to go, and I was a bit upset and aggrieved, it soon struck me. And my very good friend Murray Lachlan Young, the poet, pointed this out because he's some kind of cosmic shaman madman, said, Sean, you've been asking the cosmos to move on for years. The cosmos listened and the cosmos moved you on. Not in the way you wanted to, but that's what you asked for and that's what you got. And I was like, shit, you're absolutely right. So there you go. I should have paid more attention to the change, but it was great what happened in the end, I suppose.
But it took a bit of time, obviously, for you to accept that that change was a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
After all those years of being there and being there for us as listeners, you know?
Does that ever happen to you, Craig? I mean, I know it's different in a sense being an actor because that's you're peripatetic. That's the job of the actor is that you couldn't possibly ever, like the HMRC tried to do with us at the BBC. Well, you are now an employee of the BBC. You know, that was one of the things that was weird. They could never do that with you because your entire job is moving on from one to the next. That's the whole point. But has that kind of thing ever happened to you where you felt really comfortable in a place and then you've been shoved along without your...
Well, you know, we were talking about control before in regards to sort of radio moving into TV. That is the one thing as actors, there is such a lack of control because we're at the behest of scripts being written and roles being written and direction being given. And if you're comfortable in a job and you're really enjoying it, you've got family atmosphere and it's fantastic, and then all of a sudden you turn the page and you go, and he gets a bullet in his head. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I kind of knew it was coming. And I think when that first happened to me, I thought, well, do you know what? I've had a cracking run.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't really make sense storyline to carry on playing such a role. So maybe he needs to go down in a blaze of bullets and blood and a bit of glory. So, yeah, but as sad as I was for that specific moment, you just a bit of time away and you go, no, it was definitely the right thing to do. So that's the only thing I can sort of compare it to.
But you're absolutely, that's what you got to do. You got to zoom out, you know. You got to zoom out always. I try and tell this to the kids, you know, get a bit of perspective and just zoom. And just, it's not that big, actually. And also, you know that I'm very cosmos orientated in my old age. the motherfucking cosmos has got something else lined up for you. That's hopefully not yet the, you know, the pine overcoat. There's going to be another chapter. Something interesting is going to happen. You've got to stop something to let that energy go somewhere else, haven't you? And then it always goes somewhere interesting in the end, you know.
It does, even though it is hard to see right at the time. But I think the older we get, I don't shoot my mouth off as much as I used to and just go in and go to war straight away. I sit back and hopefully contemplate and just have a really good think.
Yeah, that's it. Did you used to be fiery? Did you used to do that a bit? Yeah, a bit fighty.
Listeners, your host is shaking his head in agreement with Sean's question. Yeah, I was a bit, mate. I was. But I've learned, and I think it's very important, to choose your battles.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's, oh my God. I mean, that is a big learning curve, isn't it? Like, I do this in my personal relationships much more now. You know, if there are one or two people in my life that are problematic for whatever reason, sometimes instead people who can trigger you, you know, by just using half a sentence or a word, you're fighting immediately. That's the step back, take a deep breath, don't reply.
Well, what I'm very good at now, and I never used to be at all, but I think it comes hopefully with gaining a bit of knowledge and educate yourself, and age, I do think age, is I remove myself from the situation. And whether I have to just switch off or physically take myself out, that's good.
Yeah.
That can only be a positive, right?
Yeah. Absolutely, mate. Chill out.
Sean, just going back to that final broadcast, of the afternoon show on Six. I remember where I was. I was driving. I was driving from Gloucestershire back up to Manchester. You had all sorts of lovely guests on. And people were trying to guess what that last song was that you were going to play. And it was, I found it quite emotional. So I think you really held it together.
I think
how was that for you, saying goodbye and turning that mic? It must have been really emotional for you.
It was huge. It was huge, that one. And it's funny that we talked today, because what's actually just happened, you might not know this, but Ken Bruce, a pop master, Ken Bruce, BBC Radio 2, 9:30 till 12, Monday to Friday, has just announced that he's leaving Radio 2, the Ravens are leaving the Tower, etc. And it was a bit like when Steve Wright left as well. I know all these guys, these radio legends. I used to work cheek by jowl with them for years, and I consider them radio friends, and that's an amazing privilege for me. But what was amazing about both of those guys is that they just sort of dropped the news, like, bang, there you go. Anyway, I'm leaving. Let's not make too big a deal of it. Here's Betty Davis eyes. Wow. You know, and whereas what I did, as you might remember, Craig, is made it the content for my show for 3 months.
Yeah, I did.
And now looking back, that looks, in comparison, like an unclassy thing to do. But the reason I did it was because, for a couple of reasons, but one was, I think everybody had this idea that I was going to some huge money gig, you know.
Keaven's dropping the BBC. Oh, I can hot potato, because he's going Virgin for £2 million, I heard. I heard they're giving him a gold Ferrari.
You know, and I was getting a bit wazzed off with it all, because I was like, I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to be gauche or sort of talk about anything that shouldn't have talked about. But equally, I didn't want it pinned on me. I didn't want it being like, why is Sean leaving? It's like, well, I'm leaving because I was asked to go, actually. But also I was making it all about me for 3 months, partially because I always need content, but also because I was like, I need to make sure that I can go on to do something else. And in the absence of big money, you know, sort of offers, which I've never had, I've got to make my own thing. So I had to go on about it to remind people I'm leaving. So I need to put you in my mind. I need you to remember me, and I need to, you know, sort of. And it worked, actually. But that last one, I remember that last. The last show was so beautiful for so many reasons, and so many lovely things. I particularly remember, and we had loads of great guests on, and Simon Pegg came on and asked for, and it played Forest Fire by Lloyd Cole, and that made me cry. And then loads of other brilliant guests, and Amy LeMay was in the studio with me, and I played this poem that Murray wrote for me, and it was just so amazing.
Oh, it was beautiful. And I remember that.
It's just a thing, you know, but what a thing it was. And we were all in bloody floods, you know, at this point. But I actually did. I never used to write anything down, but I sort of, but Phil, my producer, said, you've got to kind of write your last link, because otherwise it will, you don't know what's going to happen. So I did. I sort of kind of scripted the last part, the last link, you know. And that was a big one, because it weirdly, it sowed the seeds for the thing that I did next, you know, because I said this thing about, you might think, what's this guy going on about? It's just a radio show, you know. And I was making the point that a radio show isn't just a radio show. It's a community of people who buy into something. They buy into an idea together, and ideals, and they share ideals, and they share ideas about what's funny, or what music's good, or what values are important. And that is actually invaluable. And so that's where this idea of community garden radio came from, you know. And then I played We've Only Just Begun by the Carpenters, and everybody started crying.
I had to pull over onto the hard shoulder and get my handkerchief out.
A hard shoulder to cry on.
Playing tonight at Dublin Castle. Sean, so what was the plan? You mentioned about community, but that didn't come straight away, did it?
No.
Well, did you have to take a bit of time to think and throw a few sort of letters out there or ideas?
I had one of the things that I did, like back in the May, actually, before I left in September, was there was a lot of WTF, you know, and a lot of Zooms with various top bods of radio stations who were just so, you know, so much nonsense as well. And it's understandable. What people really want to say in that moment is, well, don't come to me for a job because you ain't got nothing. That's what the subtext is. Because getting a big radio job, you might as well be just waiting for somebody to die, because nobody ever lets go of something like that. So it's not going to happen. So there's a lot of that. And I had a massive piece of yellow paper about as big as a window. And I just started, like, memento or whatever, just started scrawling on it. What things I might do. I might write a book, write that down. Well, I'll tell you what I could do. I could do a bit of DJing, you know, and all this. I didn't do 9 1/2 tenths of it, really. And then when the time came, I was lucky. I had a couple of months gardening leave. You know, they had to pay me till the end of my contract, which was great. That hardly ever happens. So I had a bit of time to lick my wounds. Very kindly, my good friend Matt Everett, my co-presenter, who's a bit of a podcast genius, he got me this, you know, gig doing the lineup. So that was nice as well. I was at a little bit of a foothold still.
Tell, just to stop you there, tell the listeners who don't listen to the lineup. I do want you to talk about it, because I listen, and you've had lots of my friends on, and it's a lovely, lovely show. Your last guest was Joe Cornish, which I listened to in the gym last week. Very entertaining. Just tell us about the premise, mate.
Yeah, thank you for asking me to do that. And it wasn't mine; it was their idea, and I just ran with it. But it's like a cross between Desert Island Discs and that classic dinner party conversation. You know, like, who would you invite? But it's like a fantasy festival. Over the course of a perfect day, and just five acts, living or dead. That's all you got to do. Tell us what we're eating at the festival, who you're partying with, and then the rest of it is like a combination of the love that person, that guest has for the music, but then also the other things that come out in conversation when you talk about stuff like that. So, you know, there's a lot of emotional family and sort of other things, hopefully, that we touch on at times. But yeah, it's nice. It's like we were saying before, it's nice to get people talking about, enthusing about stuff that's not my new book. It's great to hear somebody talking like self-esteem, talking about how much she fucking loves Peter Gabriel or something like that, you know. So that's nice.
John Sim, past guest on this podcast, talking about the Beatles, obviously. he was always going to go with them to headline, wasn't
he? Of course he was. But that's you would have already known that. And you're a really good interviewer. You're getting good stuff out of people and incisive questions. But I didn't know that until John said that to me, that him and his dad used to be in a sort of cabaret duo.
Yeah.
And he had to break up the band. Yeah, his dad was pissed off with him. I love that story. I think that's such a funny story.
But that's the lovely thing about the lineup as well. You do get those personal stories even through the relaxed conversation about talking about bands. And they think about, oh, yeah, well, I used to love the Beatles. I remember when I first heard that, or somebody played me this record and told me I had to listen because it was going to speak to you. So you get that in a lovely, relaxed way, a lovely fashion, Sean. I really do like it. I'm not just saying that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And you do. You get good stuff. Like when we had Chappie Corsandi on, and she was just, we ended up talking about her having adult ADHD and how emotional that was and difficult that was, and how, you know, so all this stuff comes out and it's good.
I do want to talk about it, if you're all right, about how did you take the steps to get diagnosed?
God, well, actually, the reason I did it, the real reason that I did it in the end was because my eldest was diagnosed with ADHD, and that was really the start of it. I definitely noticed a lot of things that I was struggling with, and I think what happened to me was, when you're younger and you don't have dependents and you don't really have that much going on apart from you, it's very easy to mask or things get obfuscated, you know, neurodivergences. Because they just don't come up that much. But when you, all of a sudden, you've got two kids, three kids, oh my God, I'm divorced. Oh my God, I've got a breakfast show and I've got two kids and they don't live with me half the time. I've got to get organised. Oh my God, I've got a new wife. I've got a third child. My life's absolute chaos. And when it starts impacting other people's lives, like it was doing, especially my partner and especially my kids, when I found out about Arthur and I started looking at what he, you know, the diagnosis, I was like, this is me as well. So that was the kernel of it. And unfortunately, the way things are in this country at the moment, I'm not saying this with an expectation that anybody would agree with me, but it's in my personal opinion that the Conservatives are pure evil and that they're almost willfully destroying a once great country. We don't really have a working NHS at the moment because of them. So I had to go and pay some money to get diagnosed and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm only just on the journey. I've just started on the medication recently, and it helps, Craig. It really helps. I can't really describe it, but especially because you've got a different brain setup to me, but it's sort of almost like it just gives you a little bit more space in your mind. Things aren't all on top of each other and chaotic as much. You've got a little bit more space, and you can just, one really prosaic example was 2 weeks ago, I was sitting here at this desk on this laptop, and I was working through my to-do list quite well, and all of a sudden I just looked at my laptop screen and went, your desktop is an absolute fucking disaster. Look at it. There are about 700 pages on it. And so then I took 90 minutes just rearranging it, putting that in the delete bin, putting that... I can't describe to you how un-me that is.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so weird for me. It was so unusual. It's like, how can a little pill that you take do something to your synapses and to your brain chemistry, and then all of a sudden you find yourself tidying shit up? Even noticing that things are untidy, that's the bit. Because if you did notice, even without the drugs, you'd go, I would have worked out, oh, you know what, it's a bit messy in here. I piss my wife off, understandably, and somebody might fall over that. You don't even notice when you've got my condition a lot of the time. Take that drug, and you do. And it starts to change your life in ways that you didn't expect, I think.
Did the diagnosis even at its early stage, give you some sort of clarity?
Yeah, it did. I was really craving that. It was a bit difficult for a few weeks as well, and I've been warned about that. A friend of mine's girlfriend had been through the exact same thing a few weeks before, and she was saying she'd struggled with it a bit for a while, because it is also difficult to hear, it's a liberation, because it's like, right, that's what it is, and I can do something about it. I've got some agency. And that's all brilliant. But there's an interim period where you're waiting for that stuff to happen. And I think I was worse for a while, you know. And I was more angry and more pissed off and more difficult to live with and more chaotic and more confused. And I think the only thing I could work out was that maybe you start to lean into it a bit when you know you've got it. You know, before you get the treatment, you're just like, well, I'm fucking ADD. What do you expect? I'm ADD. What do you expect? Course there's loads of shite all over the floor because I'm ADD. Don't you know I'm ADD? You know, and you go through a bit of a period like that. I did anyway. Yeah. But now it feels a little bit more like, and again, it'll carry on. Hopefully it'll keep, I might get a little bit of treatment, a bit of CBT, you know. They might titrate my chemicals a bit. I've made this joke before, but this time next year I could be a billionaire CEO. You just never know.
Oh, very good, Sean. Explain to me about Community Garden Radio.
Wow.
What is it and how did you come up with it?
Lovely. This to me is my great, apart from like the kids and that, is my great achievement so far, I think. I'm so happy with it. Came from that kernel, as we discussed, which was that last show, that last link, and me just uttering those words, you know, like a radio is a community, it's like a garden and everybody tends it together. And from that kernel and from them playing the Carpenters, we've only just begun. I was like, oh, that's a manifesto, what I've done there by accident. That's what it is. And I was lucky. The Beeb gave me this platform for 14 and a half years and they allowed me to build an audience. And so I took the super fans of that, essentially, and grew this little garden. It started, to be very brief about it, we set up a Patreon, me and my friend Clive and his son Ben, who's a radio, he's like a sort of audio radio production genius.
Lovely Clive.
Lovely, you know Clive. I mean, Clive Tullow, one of the great TV producers of all time, just Google him. You won't believe what he's done. Mind you, we say that after most nights out. You won't believe what Clive's done. But we sort of set up as a little company almost, and we said, well, let's set up a Patreon, and that can host this podcast idea that I've got, which I talked about before, that's Creative Cul-de-Sac. And I thought, stupidly, that was going to be my fame and fortune, not realising that to get a podcast off the ground and get anybody listening to it is unbelievably hard work. And by the way, congratulations with Two Shot, because you've actually really done it. And it's I don't think people realise how hard it is to have anybody listening to a podcast, never mind a really good and thriving audience, you know. It's hard, isn't it?
It's really hard. And I never set out with any expectations. I thought, like, well, couple of people listen. I was just trying to learn. I was trying to get another skill under my belt of talking to people and not making the focus about the host, which I always hate when they turn it around. But it's, it's really difficult. And the fact that anybody can just pick up a mic and start broadcasting doesn't necessarily mean they should. Do you know what I mean? I don't mean that in a cruel way, but let's be honest, there's a lot of shit out there.
There's an unbelievable amount of shit out there. He says, oh, look. He says making it shit for a minute by knocking his microphone over and just making sure he's plugged in his charger. Because what you don't want is me going offline at that very point. There you go.
Sean Keaveney, professional broadcaster to the end.
This definitely doesn't happen at Wogan House. Let me just plug my charger in. But it annoyed me a little bit. There's a very famous podcast platform, and just for the end of last year, that, and they might still be doing it, but their ads kept popping up a lot. Weirdly, I popped on the word popping.
You actually did. That's a skill in itself.
That is good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pop.
And, you know, the whole idea of the ads was, if you've got a voice at all, you know, anybody can be a podcaster. Just pick it up and start. And it's like, you're right. It's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, great, democratizing, fantastic. We get rid of the gatekeepers. Everybody should be able to have a go. That's what's good. One of the good things about, if you're a musician now, that's one of the good things, is that, you know, everybody can, it's not like you have to book in air studios or something. However, nobody, musicians don't get fucking paid anymore, which is a colossal problem. Mm. But you're right. Not everybody has got, yeah, everybody should experiment and have a go. And so maybe some people make a podcast and they just play it to the girlfriend or the boyfriend or the dog, you know, that's fine. But to get one, to make it stick and to have an audience and to win awards, as you have, it's amazing. Anyway, I certainly learned that in the first 10 episodes. It's like, I don't think I've got the balls for this. I can't be bothered. And then Ben said, like a little genius, and it was a complete aside, Craig, in a chat we were having in the boardroom. He just went, I think he was online or something at the time. He was utterly absent-minded. He just went, you know that we could, you can do like a radio broadcast on Patreon. You could do a radio show. And I was like, what do you mean? Well, we could do like a live radio show if you wanted. Instead of doing the podcast, we could sort of put that on the shelf for now. You could do, we'd just send out a link and people can listen. And I said, well, but what about the music? Well, you buy a license, and as long as you play under a certain amount every year, a couple of £100 a year, it's like a proper radio station. And I was like, are you what? And that's what we started doing. And the first ones were on this desk, looking out of that window, top room of Dollis Hill. It was so unbelievably funny, Craig. It was all over the shop. And it was during that Omicron time just before Christmas, and Ben couldn't even come in. He was sitting outside in his car giving me instructions, telling me which fader to fucking press.
Yeah.
It was so glue and strings, but it was the beginning of something. And all of a sudden, like in a couple of months, we had 2,000 subscribers, you know, which is enough. That's a living, more or less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bang. Though Keaveney's back, you know. And now it's just brilliant. We have this hardcore and we every week it's totally different for me. I write stuff and it's a bit different than what I used to do on Six. I do a lot more, it sounds awful, but when I describe it, but like sketchy things or pre-written things, or I'll write a stupid fucking song and play that or record things properly. Theatre of the mind. It's a, you know, and but there's also the usual idiocy as well, and the music's amazing. I'm really proud of the music every week. So that's it. It's lovely, and I love doing it.
And is there a great sense of freedom? Because you don't have to. Surely there are no guidelines, really, are there?
No, there are none, Craig. I mean, and obviously with great power comes great responsibility. I don't have to tell you. But
11.
The two most powerful men in the free world, Frost Nixon. It is. You can say and do whatever you like. And obviously I've lost a few subscribers along the way because one or two people, understandably, the source is a bit strong for them. Some people say, I'm not paying anymore because I want to hear him present the radio and play songs. I don't want to hear his political views. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. And then, you know, there are one or two people, can you believe, Craig, who have complained about my swearing.
Excuse me. Wow.
Fucking excuse me. Wow. And but most people are just like, we just love the fact that it is this free thing, you know, and it's lovely.
And also, subscribers are going to drop off and they're going to come back on, and some months people just can't afford.
Yeah.
To support, I get that. I get it all the time with our community, our gang of listeners. But
we are living in, and I know it's a cliche now, but it doesn't mean it's not true. I mean, certainly in our lifetimes, and I think if you're 80, you wouldn't be able to remember a harder cost of living crisis, again precipitated by some of the biggest vandals and idiots that the world has ever known in charge. But that's it. I always get on the emails and say, thanks so much for your support. I completely understand you can't afford to do this anymore because it's £4 a month, but it's still, that's, at the moment, that's difficult to come by a lot of the time. So, you know, but we're surviving and we're almost thriving, which is a wonderful thing in this environment.
Well, onwards and upwards, Sean. I hope it continues to grow. I hope the garden continues to flourish and grow. Sean, this has been lovely. It's always a pleasure seeing you. I don't see you enough.
No. Can I just say that the last time I saw you, I'm pretty certain the last time I saw you in the flesh was at McCartney at Glastonbury, wasn't it? Was it that night?
Yeah, it was that night.
We were in a right old 2-8, weren't we? We were very emotional, weren't we, Craig?
It was a very emotional, long night. I think we should probably not talk about those stories, Sean. One last question, my friend. I haven't asked this for a long time, and sometimes I sign out with this. Sean, are you happy?
Oh, that's excellent. Look, really, I'm not just being disingenuous. You're making me search my brain and soul here.
Good.
Yeah, I would say that. You know what's funny is that if I was honestly answering it, and if you asked me just a few months ago, I probably would have said, I don't know that I am very happy at the moment. And I think that is a lot to do with the things that I was struggling with my brain chemistry and stuff like that. And also with all the changes that had happened and all the chaos that was going on in my life. Mm. But I do feel happy now, happier. And it's, as you know, that's anybody with any wisdom at all, even a modicum of wisdom, knows that happiness is not what you shoot for. The occasional happiness is what you shoot for, and an availability of happiness. Sort of contentment is the most I hope for as I get older. And then even a different kind of bar altogether is everybody all right? Is everybody alive? Is everybody well? Then everything else is gravy. And so, you know... Yeah, I would say to the cosmos, if you're listening, I'm very happy, and keep on, giving us the bountiful stuff, because it's nice to be here.
Sean Keaveney, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. You take care.
Craig, thank you so much for having us. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.
And another episode is done. So tell me, you enjoy it? Yeah? Has it jumped into your top 3, top 5, top 10 podcasts of all time? Oh, well, TSPs of all time. I think it maybe has. We obviously, me and Sean spoke about this, but do you know what? I don't plug things, but Sean is such a lovely bloke, and I think he's brilliant at his job. He was such an inspiration for me when I was learning to be a broadcaster, especially when I went sort of off-piste and wrote and recorded the Line of Duty podcast that I did for BBC, because it was different, because I wasn't doing what I was learning to do here, which is this. He was such an inspiration to just relax and be natural and be yourself. So I really hope you enjoyed it. I really do. I can't thank Sean enough. So yeah, do listen to The Lineup. Get it wherever you get all your podcasts. As we mentioned, he's had fantastic guests. Joe Cornish was his guest last week. Trawl back through it. He's had some really interesting people on. And of course, our TSP favourite, Mr. John Sim. It's a brilliant listen. Maybe start with John and then see how you get on. And his Community Garden Radio, you can support and listen to every Friday. Just Google that and see if you can support him on Patreon. But speaking of support, we are on Patreon. I feel like I'm asking loads of support now. But yes, the Two Shot Podcast is on Patreon. If you're enjoying what we do, maybe you want to support us. You don't support us all the time. Maybe you think, I could bung them a few quid this month and not have those pints that I've been having in January. I'm gonna put that to the TSP support community. There's gifts. I say gifts. You support us, we support you. There's mugs, there's tote bags, there's T-shirts. There's some lovely cozy hoodies that are going to keep you super, super warm
January, February, March, as it gets colder. I saw a car this morning on the way to the gym covered in snow. So I think it came over from the wrong side of the Pennines. And that is Yorkshire. No offence, people from Yorkshire. Big, big love. So, until next week, I've been Craig Parkinson. He's been producer Griff. And this has been the Two Shot Podcast. Take care of yourself. Keep warm. Maybe pop the heating on for a couple of hours. Right, I'm going to go and empty that washing machine. See you next week. The Two Shot Podcast was presented by me, Craig Parkinson. Recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. The remix of our theme tune is by Stolen Velour. Cheers.